Every time the Blackhawks win this season, you could win big with Circa Sports Illinois. One fan scores a two-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino, and 100 more win a $100 Circa app credit. Don't miss your shot. See the Blackhawks contest page.
Welcome to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Meliotis here in our downtown Chicago studios. As always, with Jack Heinrich. We're back in person after a one-week hiatus.
I was back.
Dealing with an illness that seems to never be ending around here in Chicago. Feels like everyone is dealing with something right now.
Yep, we had a good pre-show meeting, so it should be a good show.
We did. It was great. It was nice to be back together, and boy, it's like the Arctic thunder outside right now. Oh my goodness.
The river is frozen.
That's actually the first time I've ever seen the river like that. And I've been living in Chicago my entire life. That's crazy. Let's talk about the Blackhawks. Let's kind of recap where we're at in Blackhawks world. And, I think we got to start with the power play, Jack. It's been a rough go of it as of late for Chicago, falling now to 0-17 in their last 7 games for the Blackhawks. In the first 45 games of the season, the Hawks were 30 for 129 for a 23.3% success rate, which was 7th in the entire NHL. And the Hawks are really struggling to find some momentum on the power play. And the thing that's been most concerning to me, Jack, has been not just the lack of goals, but it feels like every time the Hawks are on the power play as of late, they're really struggling to just generate any sort of momentum, and they've been momentum killers. And like, I think about that Tampa Bay game on Friday, the Hawks had 3 power plays in the first period. Not only did they not score on any of those 3 that really would have kind of set the tone for the rest of the game, just didn't feel like they had much going on in them. And credit to the Blackhawks coaching staff. They've been trying some new things. They've been tinkering with the units. They've been, you know, if we saw last night against the Florida Panthers in the second period, Hawks got a power play and Jeff Blashill wasn't pleased with how the first unit performed in the first one and the first power play in the first period. So he threw out the second unit to start that second power play. And that wasn't much better because they were out there for like 40 seconds. They just could not get anything going. And then the first unit hops on and it was the same story. So it's been a rough go as of late on the Blackhawks power play. And it's been unfortunate because the power play has been like a major success. Like I was mentioning, the first 45 games of the season, they were 7th in the entire NHL. And for it to really cool off, it's been one of the primary reasons why the Blackhawks as a team haven't been firing on all cylinders like they were, you know, before the holiday break.
Yeah, both the special teams were doing really good to start the year, and the penalty kill stayed really playing really well. But you can just kind of tell when they're out of sorts, they don't even get the puck like in the offensive zone. Like they have trouble getting it like their zone entries. And I guess part of it could be just everyone moving in and out and getting used to that. But you thought like maybe with Connor Bedard coming back, you'd be able to drum something up. And it has really hurt them because that's where you'd like to see them take advantage. And what did they have? Like 3 on Friday? They had 3 power plays in the first period, I think you said. And they couldn't. I mean, they only scored. I mean, it's a tight game. Like you get a goal there, like maybe that game goes differently, and you still have chances to win. But when you're not firing on the power play, it really makes it difficult to score.
Yeah, no question. 2 things have jumped out to me as far as the struggles on the power play specifically. 1, I feel like the zone entries have been pretty poor lately. They're just having a really hard time getting set up in the offensive zone. And when they do get set up in the offensive zone, point number 2 is their puck retrievals haven't been great, where they maybe get a shot on net, but then they just seem to be like a half or a full step behind getting to the loose puck. And then it gets cleared down the other way. Hawks have a hard time breaking out into the zone again. And then it's kind of rinse and repeat. Those are the 2 areas that I feel like the Hawks can really improve in specifically. And no surprise, the Hawks spent the back half of practice today working on that specifically. And there is some good news, Jack, and I'm going to dive right into our injury report sponsored by Illinois Bone and Joint Institute. Injured after hours, they've got you covered with access to their clinical team beyond regular clinical hours. Learn more at IBJI.com. We did see the return of Frank Nazar a few games ago after he missed a little more than a month with that jaw injury. But at practice today, Teuvo Teravainen was cleared and practiced with the team in full, which means he's tracking for a return tomorrow in Minnesota. And he was part of the power play rotation today that the Blackhawks went through. And so this is what the power play units were at practice today. First unit was Tyler Bertuzzi in the net front. Connor Bedard moved from the right faceoff circle to the left faceoff circle where he started the season. Teravainen was in the bumper position. Oliver Moore is now on the right faceoff circle. And Artem Lefshinov is continuing to quarterback the first unit. The second unit is Foligno at the net front. Burakovsky drops from the first unit to the second unit. He's now on the left faceoff circle. Donato is in the bumper. Nazar to the right, although I did see Donato and Nazar, they were kind of interchanging between the bumper and the right faceoff circle. And then Matt Grizzlick is a quarterback in the second unit. So Hawks make some changes there. The most notable one to me is Bedard moving from the right faceoff circle to the left faceoff circle. Now, I asked Jeff Blasio about this specifically, and he said, it's gotten a little stale. I don't think it, this is his quote, it's gotten a little stale. I don't think it's created momentum either. It's one thing to score, but I don't think it's created momentum. Get him over, he's him talking about Bedard, get him over to that side where he's definitely been very good at going downhill on his normal side, but I think he's got the potential to be great on the other side as well. So let's get him over there and kind of give him a look and see how that power play goes that way. Now, I'm not particularly crazy about Bedard on the left faceoff circle. I really do like him on the right. But at some point, you need to kind of rearrange the decks a little bit and just get a different, a different feeling, because whatever they have been doing hasn't been working. And so we'll see how this works out. I feel like in the 8 games that Connor Bedard has played since returning from the lineup, he hasn't quite been the same player. Like we've seen flashes from it, but he hasn't had that same dominance that we saw prior to the shoulder injury that he suffered on December 12th. And the power play struggles might simply come down to they just got to get Connor Bedard going again, potentially. But I also wonder, too, Andre Burakovsky, in that 8-game span, he has just 1 point. And so for Burakovsky and Bedard were so good together at even strength for the majority of the season. And then when Connor Bedard got hurt, Burakovsky kind of had to refine himself just a little bit without Connor, and he did. But then ever since Connor has been back, Burakovsky hasn't been the same player for whatever reason, just 1 point in 8 games. And so I wonder if the power play solution is just as simple as they just got to get Bedard and Burakovsky going again.
It might be. And I think when the power play was really going, they were able to get Bertuzzi in front of the net too. And
yeah,
it's just all kind of been out of whack. I think that's a good point about Burakovsky having to reinvent himself, because those two, it's hard to think, it's like we're 4 months in the season, but like at the beginning of the year, those two got off to a great start together, and they've played together in pretty much all the on the power play and 5-on-5. And now they're switching things up, which I mean, you got to try anything right now, right? Because when you're 0-for-17, you everything's on the table. So I think getting Bedard going will help everything, because then if he gets a couple goals, they turn to him, and then he starts throwing those no look passes all over the place, and then other guys get involved. But hopefully, you know, they're flying to Minnesota and they got the moms on the trip, and yeah, Everyone can relax a little bit, and then they get a power play goal and they're off and running here this week.
Yeah, we'll get to the new line combinations in the second segment, but it is, I agree with what you're saying there too. Like Bedard and Burakovsky, they were so good together at even strength, which carried over into the power play, and that carried over into Tyler Bertuzzi's game as well, because Bertuzzi's so good in that net front. And it was interchanging, but now it's like the power play is not going, and now it's filtering into even strength as well for those guys. And so maybe it is as simple as just getting those guys going again. But I also think, I wonder how much of a factor just the weird lineup decisions that the Blackhawks have had to make lately, and it's because of the guys going in and out. Like Nazar missed more than a month with the jaw injury. Teravainen missed 6 games with the upper body injury. Burakovsky, he did miss a recent game because of an illness. Connor Bedard missed the Edmonton game because of the stomach bug. So you have all these interchanging with the lineups that has kind of disrupted the flow a little bit. The counterpoint to that, though, is the same could be said on the penalty kill, where Mikheyev missed a couple games because of the stomach bug and because he and his wife welcomed a new baby. Frank Nazar was hurt. He's part of the penalty kill. Teravainen has been out the last 6 games. He's part of the penalty kill. Foligno and Dickinson have missed times at different. So it's like the penalty kill has missed a lot of their killers, but they haven't skipped a beat. And so you're hoping that the Blackhawks power play can do the same thing. And I kind of want to go through some of the numbers because I wanted to see if the Hawks power play is it just eye test bad, or are the numbers backing up that it has been bad? And the numbers certainly back up that the Hawks power play has been rough lately. So over the last 17 power play opportunities, the Hawks have been on the ice in those 17 power play opportunities in 32 minutes and 37 seconds of ice time. So more than half of a game. Okay. In that stretch, Hawks have 29 shot attempts on those 17 power plays. So they're averaging 1.7 shot attempts per power play, which is not nearly enough. 14 shots on goal. So that's 0.8 shots per power play. So that's under a shot per power play. Again, not good enough. Scoring chances, 21. So 1.2 scoring chances per power play. This is the real kicker to me. Just 8 high danger chances for the Blackhawks on their 17 power plays. So they're averaging essentially not even 0.5 high quality scoring chances. But the kicker is the Hawks have allowed 5 high danger chances in those 17 power plays. So it's not good because the Hawks have, I mean, there've been every power, like a lot of power plays lately, the opposition is getting like a shorthanded rush. And so that when you only have a +3 high danger chance differential in 32 plus minutes of power play time, and I mean that's not great. Their expected goals, they're at 2.15. These numbers are all according to Natural Stat Trick, a great website out there that tracks all of this stuff. The 2.15 expected goals, that means the Hawks are, there's definitely unluck that they haven't been getting. However, even if you give them 2 power play goals, like 2 for 17, that's still not good enough. And the Hawks, the last thing is they've given up 1 shorthanded goal against over that stretch. And so those numbers aren't great. So the numbers are backing up the eye test that the Hawks have been struggling in the power play department, and they certainly have to get some things going. The one final thing I'll say, and I'll throw it back over to you, Jack, is I don't mind the changes that the Blackhawks made. There is one guy though that I would like to see on the power play, whether it's on the first unit or second unit, maybe more ideally on the second unit, is Wyatt Kaiser quarterbacking one of the power play units. He did it in college for a couple years, and he was really good at that position. He leads the team in goals with 5. He's got more offense in him that he's such a good defenseman at closing gaps and just the small little details Kaiser is really good at. But I think he could be effective as the power play quarterback, maybe particularly on the second unit. I wonder if the Hawks eventually try to toy with that. He did get one opportunity earlier in the season when, I'm brain cramping right now. There was one game that they had a couple injuries and Kaiser needed to step into that role, and the Hawks had just 1 power play in that game. And I think it got cut short because there was another penalty. And so he never really had an opportunity to kind of run with that opportunity. But I think Kaiser would be a pretty good point guy as a power play quarterback. That's not the reason why the Hawks are struggling in that department, but it's just another tweak that I would potentially explore if things still go sideways in the next couple games with the Blackhawks on the man advantage.
I think that's a good call because, I mean, you look at their only goal yesterday. It was because of a nice keep in by him and then a good pass over to Mikheyev, and it leads to a goal. And he's shown his offense, like even this last week, he had a nice goal in the first period, kind of creating on his own. And he's been rock solid all season, and I think that makes sense to throw him in there. And Matt Grzelcyk was a little hotter at the beginning of the year, and now they've kind of stuck him there. And I think that makes sense to throw Wyatt Kaiser out there, maybe reward him a little bit for how consistently he's played. And, I mean, like we said, you're throwing everything on the table right now, and I don't think it could hurt throwing him on there.
Yeah, and I think putting Kaiser in a more offensive situation like that could potentially grow his confidence even more, where if he's getting assist to go along with some of the goals that he has been generating, I think that could go a long way as well. And I think he understands what that role would entail too, is like making sure that you are keeping defensemen honest. Now, you don't think of Wyatt Kaiser that has like a boom of a slap shot, so that's not why you would be putting him as the power play quarterback. You would essentially do it because he's really good at walking the line. He's really good at edges, and he's sneaky good at just getting pucks through. And that's sometimes what all you need. Doesn't matter how fast the puck is traveling to the net. As long as you're just finding the open lanes and you're getting the puck through that, so the shots aren't getting blocked, and you're giving guys like Tyler Bertuzzi or whoever the net front is, Nick Foligno, Ryan Donato, just an opportunity to redirect the puck into the net. And so just another thing that, you know, if the Blackhawks are still struggling in that department, I think that would be a wise adjustment as well for the Blackhawks. But yeah, power play 0-for-17. It was a focus at practice today. I imagine it's going to be a talking point going into tomorrow's game against the Minnesota Wild, and hopefully the Hawks are able to just turn a corner again in that department, because this other side of the special teams has been really good, but the power play has been lacking. So Hawks need to get that back on track. We got more to get to here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Coming up next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Meliotis and Jack Heinrich here with you on this Monday night. Bitterly cold Monday night. And we kind of touched a little bit on the power play changes. Well, we talked a lot about the power play changes in the first segment, but we talked a little bit too on the line tweaks that the Blackhawks made, or lineup adjustments that the Blackhawks made at practice today. And maybe they aren't actually tweaks, because there were some overhauls into that. Let's kind of go through line by line what the Blackhawks line combinations were, and then we'll kind of break them down at practice today. So first line today was Frank Nazar, Connor Bedard, and Teuvo Teravainen, who's tracking towards a return tomorrow. Bertuzzi, Dickinson, Mikheyev is the second line. Green, Moore, Burakovsky as the third. Donato, Foligno, and Slaggart is the fourth line. And then the extras are Colton Dock and Sam Lafferty. Now, this is the first time all season that we're seeing the trio of Nazar, Bedard, and Teravainen on a line together. But it's also the first time since last year that we've seen Bedard play on a line with Teuvo Teravainen specifically. Now, that was a line that Bedard had started on last year during training camp, like all of training camp. That was the line. I think it was Bertuzzi, Bedard, Teravainen. And then game one rolled around and the Hawks ended up kind of changing course. Like the opening night roster was, the line combinations were different. So I'm curious to see what this line is going to look like. But with Nazar, Bedard, Teravainen, you have speed, you have youth, you have a defensively responsible winger that can also take faceoffs in Teravainen. So you got the veteran presence, defensively responsible. Then you have Bedard and Nazar, who can both play the center position, obviously, but Nazar will probably take the draws as the right-handed shot because Bedard hasn't been taking them, and it will not be taking them at least before the Olympic break. Bedard's going to probably start taking them afterwards, but I'm really curious to see what that line is going to be like, because it's not a line that we've really ever seen, but it's a lot of talent there, and I could see it going very smoothly, but I can also see it saying, or I can also see it going the other way where it's like, these three have never played together. They might need some runway to kind of figure each other out. Although, like, they have been around long enough where they kind of know each other's tendencies. So it's not like they're just kind of throwing something at the wall and letting it stick. They've been around long enough, but I'm really intrigued by that top line.
Yeah, they're throwing all those guys together. I remember we did a get to know video last year, and I said when they brought Teravainen back, like, oh, he's going to play with Bedard. Like, that was why they brought, and then he's barely played with them. So I was wrong there, but you never know how it goes.
So was I. I was wrong,
yeah,
too.
But I guess these three have played on the power play a little bit, so they know each other that way. And I mean, like you said, I think they're trying to find anything that sticks, and sticking Bedard and Nazar together seems good on paper. You got to see how they play together. And you're right, he'll probably take most of the draws with Bedard still working that shoulder out, and they want to be careful with it. But I do think that it's good throwing those guys together. I mean, Teravainen's a really smart player, and the other two got the speed and the youth. So, like you said, it could work well together. Or they've kind of been throwing the lines around a lot here recently. So you'd like to see them maybe give this like the road trip or through Friday. But when that happens, and you're kind of, I remember a few years ago in Bedard's rookie year, they're throwing the lines around like every game.
That was a line blender.
Yeah, you're just like, just leave it for a little bit or something. But hopefully they don't get to that point. But I do think it's interesting that Green, Moore, and Burakovsky are together, because you keep in Green and Burakovsky together with Oliver Moore, who's kind of been a spark recently. So maybe Moore is the trick to getting Burakovsky going again.
Yeah, no question. You mentioned with Frank Nazar, I wonder how much of that, putting him with Connor Bedard and with Teuvo Teravainen, is trying to get Connor going again. Like Nazar, he's missed more than a month with the injury, but it feels like he's starting to find his legs again and he's starting to create chances. But I feel like if all three of those players, Nazar, Bedard, Teravainen, if they can all get going, I mean, that really helps elevate the rest of the Chicago group. And so I'm curious to see if they can all take advantage of that together. You mentioned Burakovsky too, dropped to the third line. Now, that's how they did it in line rotations. But in the game yesterday, I think it was the Oliver Moore. I think it was a Green and Oliver Moore. They were the second line with Nazar, and it was the Dickinson, Mikheyev, Bertuzzi line. They were the third line. So we'll have to see how the minutes play out, but it looks like the second and third lines are kind of interchangeable, because you just know the Dickinson line is going to get the hardest defensive matchups. Now at home, you can control that. On the road, now the Hawks are going to spend the next two games on the road. They're not going to be able to dictate as much, but essentially Dickinson and Mikheyev's ice time usually comes down to whenever the opposition's top line is out there. So that's kind of what dictates their ice time. But Burakovsky, this is the first time we've seen him outside the top six this year. And I think it is kind of, he has struggled to get going over the last eight games. He has just 1 point in the last eight games. He's just looked a little fumbly with the puck. Like he's turning the puck over just a little bit more than he was showing at all in the first really like 40 or so games of the year. So just kind of a little bit of a reset for him to try to work his way back up. But with Oliver Moore and Ryan Green, you also need a guy like Burakovsky, the veteran, to provide some stability. So hopefully that will just kind of decrease the pressure on a guy like Andrei Burakovsky to, just kind of focus on playing his game again. Maybe his minutes are going to diminish just a little bit. But I wonder if this maybe could get him going where he could just focus on some of the minutes. He could focus on the lesser minutes. That way he can rebuild his confidence again and then potentially get back into a top six role.
Yeah, that's hopefully what they can do. And yeah, I mean, he was so good with Bedard at the beginning of the year. It's funny to see them not together, because it seemed like him, Green, and Bedard were together for so much of the year. And hopefully that this could get him going. And he's dropping the second power play too. Mm-hmm. So
yep.
Maybe it's just taking... maybe just letting him breathe, you know, just take a step back and get a little reset here right before the Olympic break. And then they get that 2 week break where I think only Teravainen's going to the Olympics right now. So it could be good for the team to reset here as it kind of feels like a sprint right now because of how many games that they've played. Well, they play 3 and 4 nights, and then they got a busy week this week and in the next. So, yeah, they just got to find something here. You want to go into that break on a positive, right? Not where you're kind of searching, because then you're just kind of sitting around like, well, I have a bad taste in my mouth for like two and a half weeks.
Right. Yeah. They're in the middle of a 6-9 stretch, six games in 9 days. So, I mean, they're coming out of the holiday break, it was beginning a stretch where they were playing 21 games in 40 days. So, I mean, it's essentially a game every other day.
Yeah.
So I do think that the Olympic break is on the horizon, and it's going to come at a really much needed time for the Blackhawks so they can mentally, reset. You mentioned, or we just ran through the line combinations. We went through the extras, Colton Dock and Sam Lafferty. There was a name that I didn't mention, Nick Lardis. It's because the Blackhawks sent him back to the Rockford Ice Hogs earlier this afternoon. He was originally called up by the Blackhawks. It was the night that Connor Bedard suffered that shoulder injury that he got the call to get to Chicago because he was going to be playing in the second of a back-to-back against the Detroit Red Wings because the Ice Hogs were on their way to, I think it was Milwaukee, and then they had to turn the bus around, or Grand Rapids. Yeah, that's right. And so they had to turn the bus around. Nick Lardis gets the call, and he was essentially there to provide give the Blackhawks a little bit of some offensive boost because they were essentially going to lose Connor Bedard for the foreseeable future. And Bedard at that point factored in on 50% of the Blackhawks' goals up to that point in the season. And so Nick Lardis ends up getting called up. And I thought he was okay. I mean, he had 7 points, 5 goals, 2 assists in 21 games. There probably could have been opportunity for him to get a little bit more ice time. But when he did get that ice time, he didn't. Although, to be fair, I wasn't crazy about the lines that he was playing with early on. Like, he was on the line with, I think it was Oliver Moore and Ryan Green to start. And I was like, that's too young of a line right out of the gate. Especially with, like, I get the Moore-Lardis combo because they played the first month of the season in Rockford together. So they had that built-in chemistry. But it took a while for the Hawks to kind of put him with veteran, you know, Teuvo Teravainen or whoever to kind of get some stability. And it just, I wasn't crazy about his usage, like where he was playing on, like who his line mates were. But nonetheless, he averaged 12 minutes and 39 seconds of ice time. And I think for me, I was, because Connor Bedard's back, Frank Nazar's healthy, and Teravainen's tracking for a return tomorrow, the lineup is starting to get crowded, specifically the top nine. Now, if I sit here today, if you told me Nick Lardis one of the 12 best forwards on the Blackhawks right now, I would say for sure he's one of the 12 best forwards. However, I don't want him to be the 10th best forward or the 11th best forward where he's playing on the fourth line just because he's better than, you know, Colton Dock or whoever, Landon Slaggart. I want Nick Lardis playing top 6 minutes on the first power play. And if he's not getting that in Chicago, then you want him to do that in Rockford. But on the flip side of that, you don't just want him getting that in Chicago. You want to make sure that when he is in that role with the Blackhawks, that he is confident enough to be in that role on a consistent basis. And he's not just surviving, but he's actually thriving. And so I think coming into this season, Nick Lardis, I think, needs at least one full year in the minors. And so that was this full year. Now, it was important that he did get that taste. The 21 games is probably more than I thought he was going to get, but it was because they had the Frank Nazar injury as well on top of the Connor Bedard. So they were kind of forced to keep him up here. But I do not think this is a bad decision at all by the Blackhawks to send it back to Rockford. I think they actually need to lean more into making sure that they're staying true to their word of, we want them to over marinate in Rockford. So that way, when they get to the NHL, they're the quote thriving, not just surviving. And I think this is going to be far beneficial for Nick Lardis to go back to Rockford, take what you learned in the 21 game stint in the NHL here, apply it down there, and just finish off the year with the Ice Hogs. Like, I don't think we, I don't, I think the Rockford Ice Hockey. Rockford's been struggling too, and it's because all the guys are here,
right,
like with the Blackhawks.
Right.
So, like, let him go be the guy. Let him go help turn around the Ice Hogs. Let him gain the confidence to know that once he graduates from the AHL, he knows for sure that he's ready for the NHL versus calling up to the NHL sooner when he probably could have used some more AHL time. And then you got it in the back of your mind that maybe he's still just not quite ready. So I'm glad the Hawks made the wise decision by sending him back to the minors. And I hope he stays there for the rest of the year, even though it might be tempting to call him up around the trade deadline. If they move some pieces around, I think it would be wise for the Hawks to keep him down in Rockford for the rest of the season. And then you see where he's at next year.
Yeah. You can obviously see the flashes from him and his shot. He's got a good shot and he showed some sparks, but I mean, it's always not linear. You know, he's going to have ups and downs, and I think that it would be good if he was down there the rest of the year. And it is going to be pretty tempting though, if they trade a few of their forwards and then he's just sitting down there and you're like, oh, you can come back up and play a bunch. But you want him to just know, like, he's that guy. He's a guy. He's going to be a goal scorer. He's going to be on the top power play. He's going to be a guy that you count on to produce. And if he's able to do that in Rockford, I mean, the one thing is, and we talked about it with Lucas Reichel, you don't want him on the bus back and forth. You want him, right, if he's coming back, you want him to really stay here. So he got this little taste, and he could take that going down to Rockford, and you just want him to go down there and dominate. And then next year, or if it's the end of the year and Rockford season's done and he's back, you want him to just look like okay, I'm here to stay now, like kind of like Frank Nazar did last year.
100%. And even I could argue Frank Nazar last year, he got called up sooner than I thought because the Hawks were struggling. They needed a boost. They had the Winter Classic coming up, so they wanted to kind of showcase their young. It ended up working out for Frank Nazar, but there was that first month and a half. Yeah, like he got called. He was performing so well in Rockford. He gets called up, and like you look at his offensive numbers in that first month, like he struggled to get going. And so you just want to be careful that you're not calling these guys up too early, and then it's kind of just affecting the confidence, and then you're kind of yo-yoing them back and forth. Like just kind of let them over marinate, not even think about or just be tempted to call them up. And so I want to make sure, hopefully the Hawks are able to do that moving forward, because they are going to have a lot of young guys start to graduate to the professional league soon, whether that's AHL, NHL, and you want them to make sure that there isn't that temptation to just throw them all out there together and just let them figure it out, because there still is going to be a maturation process for this rebuild as they get into the really important stages of it over the next couple years. All right, we got one more break to get to, and then we're going to wrap up Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Really quick note, we were talking about the line combinations, the last one. The Hawks are carrying 14 forwards right now, but something I did want to note is Landon Slaggart is currently at 75 games in his NHL career. As soon as he hits the 80-game mark, he is no longer waivers exempt. So he's got 5 more games before he hits that. I'm wondering if he's going to join the Blackhawks for this trip, obviously in the mom's trip, the Minnesota, Pittsburgh games. And then when the Hawks get back, I wonder what they're going to do with that situation now that they have a healthy lineup. And so just something to monitor moving forward. And then last thing, you know, Jack, we were in the building at the United Center on Sunday, and it was a roller coaster of emotions, because it was Hockey Fights Cancer Night. And that's one of my favorite nights at the United Center, because you honestly go through so many emotions, because so many people in the building are at different stages of the cancer journey, whether they're, you know, they just started treatment, whether they're cancer free, whether they're in the thick of it. There were healthcare workers that were also there that they always get recognized, and our very own John Hansen always does a great job in the arena as well to make sure that they are highlighting those people that are in attendance. And one of the memorable things about that night too is during the first TV timeout, they gave a really nice tribute to our very own Troy Murray, and they were able to pan to the broadcasters, us in the radio booth, Rick Ball TV, and then Darren Pang between the benches. And I just thought it was a really cool gesture that the Blackhawks did that for Troy. Now, we know Troy very well, and there's maybe a part of him that maybe doesn't like the spotlight like that, but it was cool that Blackhawks fans and us were able to let Troy know how much that we are thinking of him still, how much we miss him, how much we love him. And it was just a very touching gesture by the Blackhawks and a very, very emotional night at the UC last night.
Yeah, that always is. And it was cool that they honor Troy like that. I mean, every game day and even non-game day, I still think of, you know, Troy, because he was just a fixture for me since I've been, you know, growing up and then covering. He's just the nicest guy in the world. And you can never tell what he was going through, because he's always like just upbeat and like, you know, pranking John or you or me or Z or whoever. But we do miss Troy. We love him a lot, and we're fighting with him. And we miss him.
No question. All right. On a lighter note, the mom's trip is coming up.
Yeah.
They left today. We saw, I was at practice earlier and all the moms were congregating. They were getting ready to hit the team charter. And it's always a cool kind of break in the schedule where you do get that energy from the moms and kind of pay it back. Like, man, there were some early mornings and late nights and, you know, driving them to, you know, to hockey practice when they were kids. And, it's a cool moment to recognize what the moms did for all those players to get them to where they are. And even some of them, they've kind of labeled it moms / mentors trip now, because there are some whose moms aren't around, and maybe it was an aunt, or it was you know, you can bring your sister, or, you know, I know Steve Conroy's bringing his daughter. So just a cool moment that the Blackhawks, or a cool trip that the Blackhawks are doing. It's going to be in Minnesota tomorrow, and then they're going to visit our old buddy Joe Brand over in Pittsburgh, who we just saw a few weeks ago. And so that should be a fun trip for the Blackhawks, and hopefully they're able to get 4 points total for the moms. That's going to do it for Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Our next show is Tuesday, February 3rd at 7 p.m. We'll see you then.